This is a Vault Studios production.
I'm Spencer Brudig.
I'm Will Johnson.
I'm Jessica Knoll. This show contains graphic material and is meant for mature audiences.
This week on True Crime Chronicles.
Me and my boyfriend just got into an argument and he's going fucking crazy right now. I don't know what's wrong with him.
What exactly Something is wrong doing? With him.
Nothing. He's grabbing me like he keeps fucking holding me down, trying to tell me to open my mind. He keeps telling me that something's sounding like the devil has taken over me. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's holding me down.
Before that terrified voice crackled through the phone line, 20-year-old Decorius Jones was just a loving son, brother, and doting boyfriend. Deanna Horton describes Decorius as a soft-spoken, kind person.
He was a big guy, all this stuff, but he was pretty much like a teddy bear. I mean, he was the sweetest person ever. He was genuine, he was loving, he always thought about others.
They were high school friends, turned sweethearts, and had been dating for 6 months. He was a wrestler and played football in high school before dropping out, but later he finished his GED. Now Decorius works with his high school buddies waterproofing basements and lives with 18-year-old Deanna in a one-bedroom apartment at Sugarloaf Crossing in Lawrenceville, Georgia. He loves his family and was a good kid growing up.
He was actually a sweet child, you know. He was a child that would always, I guess, you know, make you little strange things and give it to you, you know. He was just that kind of a kid. He was real.
That's his dad, Curtis Jones.
He liked cooking. He wanted to be a chef. So, you know, he started going to school for culinary arts and everything. So that was his passion. But other than that, you know, he was just a young man and really just experiencing life, trying to find his way.
In finding his way, he'd been experimenting with drugs, specifically acid.
I actually talked to him that morning. And we had a conversation, and he had let me know that he had did it. And I really just took it as him trying something, and it was going to just be something he tried. So I talked to him and was like, because he wanted to tell his mom, and I was like, I don't think that's a good idea for you to really let her know that, because I don't want her to worry, and I know how she is about her children, you know, and I didn't want her to go through that mental area, you know, thinking about him doing that and what could happen or what does this mean in his life, you know. So and he was on it then, you know. Mm-hmm. But like I say, I just thought that it was going to be, okay, he's just going to do this and it'd be over with. Because I know when I was younger, I mean, I had experienced, not acid, but, well, I have experimented with drugs myself when I was younger. And I thought it was just, you know, I looked at it like my life.
On October 15th, 2016, he told his mom, Shakora Jones, about trying acid when she drove him to the grocery.
I had saw him earlier that day because I had took him to Walmart, like I said, to pick up a few things, do some grocery shopping, pick up a few things. So he had talked to me about how he's experimenting with him.
Acid opened up his mind, he told her, and he could see everything so much clearer.
I said, and this stuff affects people differently. So we had a conversation. He's like, yes, ma'am, I understand. So, as like his father said, I'm thinking something. He tried, he experimented with it, and it was going to be over. Like I said, I never knew it would get to this extent. Because had I even thought that it was going to get to this extent, I would have called and felt like, look, you need to come home now. Because he wasn't acting to me like he was like, he opened his mind and he see everything. But he wasn't acting in any kind of erratic or violent or aggressive behavior. Mm-hmm. He was just like talking like his mind had just been opened up. And had I knew that it would get to that point, I would have called his father and he would have come home.
Yeah.
But see, I think what happened after we parted, I guess he did some more. So, but then I don't know how much he did. So, you know, I know they say sometimes with these drugs, it have a delayed reaction. So I guess you figure is not doing nothing, so he may took more, and then all of a sudden it hit him at one time.
Yeah.
So, but I never thought it would go this far.
But it would, especially when he doesn't heed her warning to stay away from the hallucination-inducing drug. Later that night, everything would spiral into the unknown and what seemed like an alternate realm of reality. It's a brisk fall evening, and it starts out like so many others for the young couple when Decorius picks up Deanna from work at Papa John's at about 9 p.m. But that night is different. He is different.
When he first got there, he didn't have on a shirt or anything. He just had on shorts and stuff. And then he got out, he came around, opened the door for me. I got in the car, everything just seemed fine. I was like, okay. So we're driving. And from where I worked was the Papa John's on West Pike Street. And then you turn on Old Norcross there. And we're going down Old Norcross. And he's like talking to me. And I'm talking back to him. But then he's like, look at me while you're talking to me. And I'm like, okay. He's never said anything like that to me before. So he's like, look at me while you're talking to me. And so I'm like, okay. I'm looking at him and I keep looking away because I'm not making direct. He wants to make direct eye contact with me, but I'm like, you're driving. So like, why would you want me to look directly at you? He's like, look at me. I'm fine. I can drive and talk to you at the same time. I'm like, no, you can't. So he starts getting upset with me. So we're arguing. And by this time we get to the apartment, because it's probably like 8 to 10 minutes away. We get to the apartment, and by this time we had already argued, so I'm like, okay, whatever, I just want to go in the house.
His tone and his demeanor drastically change, and his rage escalates.
We park, and he's like pulling me, like we hadn't even gotten out of the car yet, and he's like pulling me over, like, the console, like to his side, like to the driver's side, like trying to keep me from getting out of the car. And I'm like, what are you doing? Let me go. I'm trying to get out of the car. Like, what's wrong with you? So by the time I end up fighting my way off of him, getting out of the car,
she fights him off and runs up the stairs to their apartment.
He eventually catches up with me, picks me up, put me on his shoulder, carries me all the way to the apartment, up the stairs and in the apartment. So by this time I'm like really scared. I'm like, okay, what's going on? I'm asking him, like, what's going on? You know, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? And have you, because at this point I'd already known that he'd been taking the acid. So I'm like, have you been taking it again? Like, are you on a trip right now? Like, what's going on with you? He gets me on the couch. Like, I sat on the couch. He comes to the couch and he's like yelling at me. And he's like, it got to some point where he starts saying, tell me that you're not afraid of anyone but God and your mom, because I'm not afraid of anyone but God and my mom. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, my mother's a god and I'm not afraid of anything, and basically seeming as if he was like invincible in some type of way. So I'm like, okay, I'm not afraid of anyone but God and my mom, because I can see that he's pissed off. I don't want to, you know, do anything to make him more upset at this point. So he's telling you this, and then he's like, no, you're lying.
He starts choking her.
I'm like, please let me go. Let me go. I can't breathe. Say it. And he keeps telling me to say it. At this point, I've already said it. So he keeps choking me. Then he starts smacking me in my face. He's like, tell me this, tell me that. And I'm like, Decorius, I've already told you this. I'm afraid. Please let me go. I will leave. Just let me go. He was not going for it. So eventually, I fought my way off of him. And I'm standing by the TV. And the TV that we had was on like a stand, like a TV stand. So I pushed the TV against him, trying to get him away from me. And at that point, he's like, get out. Get out. So at that point, I'm getting out. I was already on my way to the door anyways, but me getting to the door, he's still grabbing me, and then he pushed me on the ground, choked me.
Deanna breaks free and bolts out of their apartment. She sprints down the stairs to the back of the complex and turns the corner, where she finds a spot to crouch in the bushes and hide. Petrified, she waits. No one comes. Still out of breath, sobbing, and fearing for her life, she calls 911.
Calm down a minute, Pack, and understand you're 1795 what?
1795 Old Norcross Road.
Okay, why are you crying?
Me and my boyfriend just got into an argument and he's going fucking crazy right now. I don't know what's wrong with him.
What exactly is he doing?
Nothing. He's grabbing me like he's fucking holding me down, trying to tell me to open my mind. And he's telling me that something's wrong, like the devil has taken over me. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's holding me down. Like, he's literally holding me down.
Okay, where is he now?
He's upstairs. He's taking all of my shit out of the house, telling me that I need to get out because I'm trying to protect myself from him because I'm fucking scared.
Quit yelling, okay? Take a deep breath for me. Can you make yourself safe and go into another room?
I'm outside. I can't go back in there. He's going crazy.
Okay, when you say he's going crazy, what exactly is he doing?
I don't know what's wrong with him. He's hitting me. He's grabbing me. He keeps holding me down like something is wrong with him. I keep telling him to let me go because I can't breathe, and he keeps holding me down, and he doesn't care.
Okay, what does he look like? White, black, Hispanic, Asian?
He's black, and he's tall.
What's his name?
Decorius Jones.
Moments later, a police cruiser drives past the apartment, but fearing Decorius will see her, Deanna doesn't flag them down. And with a fat lip from their struggle, Deanna frantically calls his mom for help. She's only 5 minutes away and comes right over.
She was sitting on the steps. I told her to go sit in my car. He like, Mama, she lying. She is trying to trick you. She the devil. She just trying to trick you. Because in his mind, he was trying to save me from her. Because he thinks she going to do something to me.
Right.
Because like I said, his mind at this point, his mind playing tricks on him. So that's when he was like, well, Mama, don't go back out there, Mama, because she's trying to do something to you. I'm like, I'm fine. So that's when he got aggressive with me, didn't want me to leave the house. And I'm like, that's when she heard me telling him to stop, let me out of the house. And then she opened the door.
Deanna leaves the car and goes upstairs. She can hear him yelling at his mom.
She's trying to calm him down. And it's just going back and forth. The next thing I know, I hear screaming. I'm like, okay, at this point, I'm really scared to open the door. I don't know what's going on, what's happening. I hear screaming, and then all I hear is, Decorius, I thought you would never hurt me. I thought you would never hurt me. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And I'm like, oh, my God, he's doing something to his mom right now. And I didn't know what to do, what to think. I didn't know if he had a knife. I didn't know what was going on. I was really afraid for my life, but I couldn't just leave her in there. So I opened the door. At this point, I see him. He's on the ground with his mom on the ground. He's choking her, and he's a pretty big guy. His knee is in his mom's neck. Like, he's choking her on the ground, and his knee is holding her down against her neck. And I'm like, What are you doing? And then it's like, and this is the last time I've physically seen his face. It's like from where the carpet cut off to where the front door is in our apartment, it was probably like maybe a 5 foot gap. I kid you not, he literally launched from that carpet to the door at me. And it was, I don't know. It looked like I saw a demon in his face, honestly. Like, he literally launched up. It looked something like inhuman, like.
In tears, she flies down the stairs to the second set of apartments and hides under the staircase. Decorius runs out of the apartment, down the stairs, and into the vast wooded area behind the apartments, wearing nothing but navy blue basketball shorts. He has no shirt, no shoes, no wallet, no cell phone, no keys. Shaking, Deanna calls 911 again.
He's going crazy. He just tried to suffocate his mom. I don't have time to explain. I need someone to come out here now. Like now.
It's about midnight when his mother races barefoot across the street to call 911 from the gas station. Out of breath, Shakura waits for the dispatcher to pick up on the other line.
I think he on something. He done jumped on me. I had to run the house. I left my cell phone in the house, and I left. He was chasing his girlfriend. I think he's on something.
Okay, so you're in apartment 621.
No, I'm in the gas station up the street. I had to rub no shoes on, man. Could you please get somebody out here?
What does he look like?
He's a tall black guy. Please don't kill him. You can stun him, but please don't kill him.
Okay, do you know what he has on?
Some shorts. That's it. Shorts and underwear. He run around with no shirt, no shoes on.
Okay, and where are you?
I'm in the gas station up the street. My spirit's for the child, because I'm safe right now.
And you said it's your son?
It's my son, yes. He's about 6'2", 6'3". He weighs about 225, 230 pounds. Please okay. tell him, don't kill him, just stun him. If you have to, but don't kill him, please.
Okay.
He's trying to force something in my mouth. Trying to bite him, then he hit me in my head. Please, man, but I don't want to go trigger him, but I'm really afraid for my life.
Okay, well, I do have units on the way to you, okay? But just stay on the phone with me, okay?
Okay. Ma'am, please, I don't want nothing to happen to this child. I don't want him to go to prison, but I know he owes something. Oh, my God, I know he's probably going to tear up my phone. Because he got in mind from the devil in my mind. He's trying to get the devil out of me.
Gwinnett County Police are dispatched to the scene for a domestic dispute between a mother and a son. And when they arrive, Shakura has a swollen lip and a scratch on her left eye. One of the officers cautiously approaches the apartment door that's been left wide open. He enters with several other officers, not knowing what or who they'll find. Waiting downstairs, Shakura and Deanna fear that Decorius's demeanor could be seen as threatening by the officers, and they yell, "Don't shoot him! Don't shoot him!" Every window in the apartment is open, and as the officers make their way through each room, turning on each light one by one, Deanna watches from below. The couple's bedroom is the last room they inspect. Her heart is racing. She's not sure if Decorius went back into the apartment after their chase down the stairs, and now she's afraid for his life. Decorius isn't inside. Police search the woods behind the apartment, but there's no sign of him. They file a missing persons report and an incident report for the injuries to Deanna and Shakura. And on October 16, 2016, police issue a warrant for Decorius for 2 counts of battery and 1 count of false imprisonment. For more than a year, police searched for Decorius with no new leads in the case.
Because he's over 18, it's really not a pressing issue, you know. They don't feel no crime has been committed or whatnot. So they were real hesitant about helping us search for him because he's a grown. But one of the officers that we spoke with did go to where we told him we last seen him, and he had went through the wooded area, but they never did find anything. I understand where they're coming from because with today's society, there are so many young adults doing their own thing, leaving, going. But, like, parents know their children. You know, like, well, if I knew I had a problematic son that may get mad or may get upset or may just disappear for weeks at a time, I wouldn't have been alone. But he was not that type of person. And he was close to his whole family. We have a real close-knit family, so. But I understand he is an adult and he has the right to go and come as he please, but he wouldn't go away from his family without talking to him for days and weeks and months at a time.
His family looks for him everywhere and posts thousands of flyers throughout the area. There's been no reported sightings of Decorius since that October night. And so, in their search for Decorius and for answers they aren't getting from police, his family hires a private investigator.
I can't really speak for the police department, but it wasn't nothing added up to them to look at it as a missing persons case. They did put it in and did put him down as a missing person. So he's listed in databases as missing. But what happened that night, they ended up issuing warrants for his arrest. And at first they thought that he was running because he had warrants on him.
That's Jane Holmes with Patricia Lane Investigations.
And to this day, sometimes his mom will even tell you that she said, "I have hope he's alive. And I think he's alive. I think he's embarrassed of his actions that night." And so they're actually, the warrants are still active, and they do send out someone to investigate or to go to the mom's house to say, you know, is he here? At one point, we were told that Gwinnett County thought that he was being hidden because of the warrants. But they're only misdemeanor assault warrants. There's nothing, he doesn't have a criminal history. He doesn't have any type of activity with law enforcement at all. So for him to disappear for a year with such a minor misdemeanor charge just didn't make sense to me or anybody else.
After several interviews with those closest to Decorius, although some of his friends refused to talk to her, Jane enlists the help of Tracy Sargent, a canine handler and cadaver dog search investigator. Tracy and her canines, Chance and Draco, specialize in missing persons cases.
They're an investigative tool. They're part of this team.
So what I have realized over the years when I first started this was that, hey, we've got to find that person. That's what we're here for. Honestly, it's not. We certainly want to find them, but it's about information. And what I tell the families and law enforcement agencies, there's only one thing I can promise you. We're going to know more at the end of the day than we did at the beginning of the day. Because the dogs, again, will tell us where something is or where something isn't. So what I've realized over the years is that knowing where somebody isn't is just as important, and it's a very important part of the investigation.
Jane and Tracy schedule a cadaver search for November 15, 2017, thinking maybe Decorius was injured and never made it out of those woods that he ran into a year earlier.
Tracy and I both thought, well, if he's deceased, he's probably going to be somewhere nearby, and maybe he got hurt in the woods. You know, the family searches, but you can, when you talk to Tracy, you'll see you can walk right over a body, you never see it. Because you think you're looking for something, then you're envisioning a body, but after 3 or 4 months, it's not going to look like that. And plus, we had fall and the leaves and the pine straw. I mean, it could easily be covered.
Tracy and her team carefully combed through the wooded area behind his apartment complex. But after hours of scouring acres of land, they find no evidence of Decorius.
I was thinking we'd find him. But there's one area that we couldn't search with the dog because it's a very boggy, muddy, it's almost like quicksand. And the dog was sinking, I was sinking, Tracy was sinking. And so we told the police that that's one area that they may need to search with something else. But it's been very frustrating. So, could he be alive out there? He could be.
To this day, there's been no sign of him. And 3 years later, Deanna Horton can't shake that night. It's seared into her memory.
It was very severe for me. At first, I wasn't eating. I wasn't talking to anyone. I really went into like a really deep depression because I did love him. I mean, I cared for him. And just knowing and thinking back of how sweet he was, it was just shocking to think that all of this happened. And especially to me. For me, I had to push it to the side because I had other things to do. But it's always going to be there. And I feel like it's really going to be there because we don't know where he is. I feel like when he is found, that will be really a sign of relief. And I can probably come to terms with what happened and just him being okay. Because I, no matter what happened, no matter how I move on, I just want him to be okay. I want him to come home. And that's really it. This is nothing you can really forget about.
And while she's moved on with her life, she wants him to know she forgives him.
Still love him as a person, definitely. He was a wonderful person. I would just say just come home and just try to make it better. No one's holding it. Well, I'm not. I'm sure his family is holding it against you. It happened, and I feel like the main thing now is for someone to actually just see his face.
She holds out hope that he's still alive.
In my heart, I really feel like he is. And I just feel like if he is alive, he's somewhere probably delusional, don't know what's going on. I would hope no one's doing anything to him. But then again, if he's not, I feel like somewhere in that span of what happened in that time, he ran up on someone else and someone, you know, was trying to defend themselves. So either way, I hope he's alive. And I just hope he's alive. I don't really know where to go from there. I don't really like to think about the fact of him not being alive, but it's where you get to a point where you really have to face reality.
And his family holds the door open, waiting for him to come home.
Man, I love you, man. And like I say, there's nothing that you could do to stop that love. And we need you home because it's a void in our lives without him.
We love him. We miss him. We want him to come home. He know he always has a home to come home to. There's nothing he can do where he couldn't come home. Like I said, if we need to get you some help, be it mental, physical, whatever needed to happen, we gonna make it happen.
Curtis begs anyone with information about his son to come forward.
He has a family that loves him, and you know, a lot of people are hurting because they don't know where he's at. And I just would plead for anyone with a heart or conscience to, you know, give any information that you have about the chorus, you know, because if it was vice versa and it was your family or a family member, think about how you would feel, how your mother would feel, or how your father would feel, your sister, your brother, you know. So I would plead with them in that area to, you know, help us find the chorus. Just not knowing, and I guess just thinking, what could I have done to not have let this happen, you know? So I think that's kind of like the hardest part for me.
Shakora believes her son is still alive.
I don't feel in no way, shape, form, or fashion that he's dead. I just feel he's somewhere not in his right mind. But I feel in time, he will get back to his right mind. And he will come back home to us when he's more like himself.
The family set up a $5,000 reward for information about Decorius's whereabouts. And a reward, Jane Holmes says, can be a telltale sign of who knows something. Or in this case, who doesn't.
If someone knows where he is, if he's being hidden by someone, then they may come forward and give a tip to get the money. Because people are always, you know, when no one comes forward, that either tells me the only person, the people that know where he is, are someone who had something to do with him being gone, or really no one knows.
But so far, no takers.
Nothing indicates to me that he's alive, because anyone that works in missing cases knows that it's very, very hard to just go completely off the grid, especially when you've got no money, no phone, no way to communicate. He can't get an ID because he's got warrants. He hasn't popped up on the grid anywhere. Unless we've thought of scenarios of maybe he's in a homeless shelter and maybe he tripped out so much that he had a psychotic event that he doesn't know who he is. There's no proof that he's dead, and there's no proof that he's alive.
Maybe no proof means there is hope.
All right, Jessica, thanks for bringing us this story. It's crazy. This young man has just vanished after this, which is, I mean, the story is harrowing. It's one you've been covering, or at least started covering a while back, right, when it first happened?
Right. I started covering this story actually about a year after he disappeared. So right about when Jane got involved as a PI on the case and interviewed her and Tracy and then his parents. And you know, even at that point, his mom fully believed that he was still out there, still alive, and had maybe lost his memory, and something had happened to him. But she believed with all her heart that he was still alive.
And you mentioned the private investigator and another update, right, from her as well, right?
Right. I talked to Jane last week, and a strange turn of events. The Gwinnett County Police had taken his phone to do some analysis on it to see if they could figure anything out about his whereabouts, and they misplaced his phone. And so it took several months before Jane actually found out that they had found his phone in some random box in a cubicle, and now she has the phone. But they had... It'd gone missing for, I think, about a year.
So when you're saying that recently she went to look into this, as you explained in the story, right, and the phone was missing and then it's turned back up and now she's able to look at it?
So Jane actually had possession of his phone when I interviewed her, and the phone was kept active. His mother, Shakora, kept the phone active in case he were to call it or anyone else would, you know, call or text to kind of use those as breadcrumbs and clues to where he might be. So they kept the phone active. And back in 2018, in the spring, Jane went to the Gwinnett County Police Department, who was asking for the phone so that they could do an analysis on it. And when she'd called them back and said, hey, what's the status of the phone? They couldn't find it. And so then in November 2019, she got a call from them saying that they had found it in a box in some cubicle.
And Jessica, can you describe the woods and kind of the searching that took place after he went missing into these woods? I mean, it was in the fall, so he would not have died from hypothermia and initial exposure. So what was the timeline of them searching, and how intensely did they search the woods?
From what I'm told from Jane and his parents, the police did a preliminary search soon after he disappeared. They couldn't find him. I don't know that they went back and did an extended search, but I do know that Jane and Tracy, with the cadaver dogs, had gone out a year after he disappeared in search of him. And we're talking several acres that they looked over. And by the time that they had gone to search for any clue of him being out in the woods, there was construction happening, so there was a lot of debris and things like that that they had to get through. And they actually did find some bones, but then it turned out that they were deer bones. They found no trace of any evidence that he was there once he ran into the woods. He didn't, you know, they thought maybe he had injured himself and maybe died while he was out there, but there was no trace of that at all.
All right, Jessica, any final updates on this story or this investigation?
The family still has a Facebook page that's live, and that's Jane monitors that Facebook page for messages and things. And you can find that at facebook.com/findDeCoreus Jones. And if you have any information about his whereabouts, you can call the Gwinnett County Police Department in Georgia at 770-513-5302.
All right, Jessica, thanks for bringing us the story this week. Spencer, you're bringing us next week's story, I believe, a case out of Denver.
Yeah, that's right. It is brought to us by Kevin Vaughn, who is a veteran reporter out in Denver. And it is about a young intern, journalism intern, that is interning at a local radio station that disappears.
All right, we'll be back with that one next week. Jessica, where can people learn more about us?
We are on social media on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Vault Studios, as well as Inside the Crime Vault, and a Facebook group page that is Inside the Crime Vault, where you can come and discuss this case and other cases that we're covering and chat among other people who may have a case that we should look into.
All right, thanks very much, Jessica. We'll be back next week with a new case and a new story.